Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where we just got back from the first stop on Piper's Redemption Tour, and it didn't turn out so well. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 93 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 5, Episode 14 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., entitled The Devil Complex, which aired March 23rd, 2018.
And this episode was written by Matt Owens and directed by Nina Lopez Corrado. And as usual, for this second half of S.H.I.E.L.D., we get to have some returns of old faces, which really starts to make me think we're in the final stretch of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a series, just because it's like a reunion show all the time. But it also was, you know, leading towards what we're expecting. But at the same time, I'm like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I think that's normal for this time of the 22 episode season. So we'll see.
Yeah, and that's a good catch there because, you know, you mentioned Piper's Redemption Tour, which is obviously what Coulson brings up. But yeah, I got the same kind of feeling about, you know, certainly the return of Ivanov. But
we also got some great moments also, I mean, along the way. So it'll be great to talk about some of the forward progress that some of the different plot lines made. But yeah, you mentioned Anton Ivanov, the return of Zach McGowan as the Superior. This is a really cool loose thread to have tied up in a certain sense, at least brought back, because he was out there and we knew he was out there. And so it's great that they brought him in on. I don't know if they consider this a fourth member of the supervillain team, since he does have his superpowers of sorts being a cyborg. But if so, I'd be down with that. And the other person that showed up very briefly at the very end was Peter Mensa as a Kree who is billed as the name Kovas, Q-O-V-A-S. Now, I'm assuming that it's Cassius' father, but obviously we have to wait and see on that score. But I just thought it was cool that this particular actor was playing Kovas because we saw him in Midnight Texas when we covered that show on Sci-Fi Fidelity as Lemuel, the really cool vampire on that show. And also, apparently he was the hidden one in Sleepy Hollow, although I didn't see that particular season. But he's got some supernatural credibility to his name, so why not join a sci-fi superhero show as well?
Yeah, good point.
So it's fun to see these guest stars show up as we flesh out the supervillains versus Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but let's go ahead and dive right into our episode discussion.
All right, Mike, now you mentioned before we went on the air that this episode was a little disjointed, and it certainly was, and that it's still a great episode. But one of the things that in your little intro there about Ivanov, so what's the deal with him? He's not an LMD, he's a cyborg?
Well, he is an LMD. The reason I call him a cyborg is because he's not animated by an artificial brain. He controls the LMDs with his head in a jar, which goes back to season four. That certainly was true then when he had an army of superiors to throw at S.H.I.E.L.D. But I assume that might still be true, at least in small form. Maybe he's not able to churn out as many LMDs of himself because of the thing that Coulson notes, which is that the robots don't look as realistic, the ones that they have as their army now. But I do have to think that he's participating in Hale's plan specifically because she has his head in a jar.
Okay, and that is where I was headed, that he better be careful with this face because he might not get another one.
Exactly. He might end up with a uniform face like the robots that Hale has, and that wouldn't be quite as fun. He wouldn't be able to make witty quips.
No. Now, the other thing that occurred to me is the title of the episode, and we don't often talk about the episode titles. The Devil Complex, do you think that's a play on the God Complex? And if so, who are we talking about has a God Complex, Fitz?
Yeah, I have to imagine this title refers to Fitz because he thinks he's more evil than he is. I think he's failing to take into account that the mixture of framework fits and real fits is what makes him who he is. It's just that the framework pulled out only the bad parts of him. And so he thinks that he is only the bad part. And so he's got a devil complex about himself.
Okay, but then if we go to the God complex angle, does he feel as if he is the only one that can save the Earth from exploding?
Maybe. Maybe he's just putting it all on his shoulders. I mean, I think the subconscious part of him realizes that the only way he's going to get this gravitonium to work is if he does some really bad things to Daisy. So yeah, I do think it's something where he thinks he's the only one that can do it. In this case, evil instead of good, that a God complex would be.
Okay. And that's certainly a lot for one man to bear. But one of the themes that runs throughout the episode is the idea that hard choices are going to have to be made if they're going to save the timeline. And it also got me to thinking that, you know, we talk about especially Coulson and the approach that they don't want to necessarily kill anyone. Of course, people do die in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it often seems that Coulson doesn't really have to make the kind of tough choices we're talking about here. Or am I just forgetting?
No, I think that's true. And certainly the choices are being thrown at them such that the only obvious choice is the one they end up making. But maybe that won't always be true. I mean, I think what we're dealing with here is the idea that what if this fear dimension rip is what causes the end of the world? Now, I think that the solution that they come up with is part of the same timeline that has always occurred, and that the fear dimension had nothing to do with what tears the Earth apart. But how can they know that? How can they know which of their decisions is going to be the one that will steer it in one direction or the other, including giving Daisy back her powers, for example?
Okay. Now, I want to jump to a storyline that doesn't get a lot of airtime, and that's Mac and Elena. And, you know, one of the choices I think especially Mac has to make is you got to let her go. I mean, he keeps harping on this. You need to give yourself time to heal. But I'm looking at her from the standpoint that physically, she's probably okay. She needs to emotionally heal. And what better way to do that than to throw herself into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as part of the team? She's an agent, as she reminds him.
Well, and the same is true for her robot parts therapy that she's going through. He's kind of treating her with kid gloves there because her stumps, I guess, haven't had a chance to heal yet. And I guess there's some pain involved. But again, like you said, the inspiration of working on this physical therapy is probably what gets her through the day and gives her hope. So I think the same would be true if she had other duties as well, including, I think she points out, why don't you just let me at least watch the monitors for any manifestations from the fear dimension?
Yeah. And he says, okay, that's a possibility. And I'm thinking, what a possibility? Come on.
Yeah, really.
And I'm thinking back to that line she used last week. You know, if I had arms, I'd slug you.
That's right. He would deserve it.
And in fact, she says she just needs arms enough to be able to punch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, she may be overstating it a little bit. It's not like she can jump in the same way she always has, but she can certainly help the team.
Right. But then I think what really comes out of her appearance in this episode, and like I said, she doesn't appear much, but she tells Mac that nothing can happen to her since she makes it to the future. And then he brings up the idea that the future could be changed. We're not going to see her arms return unless we went to the past, which I certainly don't think we're going to.
Well, they both have a point, right? Because the robot arms might end up being something of a solution for her, but that doesn't mean she'll still have them in the future that we saw with Cassius. They would have just taken them away from her, just like they would have taken Coulson's robotic hand away from him. So I don't think that anything has changed, but Elena has a point and Mac has a point. The future, as she saw it, means she's guaranteed to live. That doesn't mean she should be reckless. But at the same time, the goal of the team is to make some sort of change. So if they do end up making changes, then she doesn't have that guarantee anymore. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Right, because she mentions they would have broken the loop.
Right, and they might, for all they know, they might have done it already. I don't think they have, but they don't know that.
Right. Well, I guess one of the big storylines, I mean, certainly Fitz, at least for me, is the primary focus of this episode, and not only his quest to seal the rift, but also the psychotic break that he seems to be going through. But this plan to reestablish Hydra. And the first question I have, because clearly Hale is not calling the shots. So who is it? I mean, we see that guy in shadow in the epilogue, but any ideas?
Well, that's Peter Mensah, as I mentioned in the show news. They're the Kree known as Kovas. I think it must be Cassius's father.
Okay.
But what he would have to do with Hydra, I have no idea. But he does mention the Confederacy, and the Confederacy was something that Cassius mentioned as well. So I can only imagine it's tied into that, especially since he has that vial of, what's that stuff called?
Odium.
Odium, thank you. Yeah. So that obviously ties in with what we know about his family. So I don't know how it ties into Hydra. Maybe that's just something the Kree are using to manipulate Hale. But considering Hale talked about not really being into bringing back Hydra, but rather creating something new, it does seem kind of a strange note to end on when he says Hail Hydra.
Yeah, because it certainly seems a little late in the game to be creating this whole new big bad that might not see the light of day after season 5.
Exactly. So is it just the remnants of the idea of Hydra that she's trying to resurrect in some small way, or maybe they're trying to manipulate each other? I mean, I think if there's one thing we saw about Hale in this episode is that she is very capable of playing a long game.
Right. Of course, we think we've trapped her, but oh no, Coulson, I actually trapped you into trapping me.
That's right. And that was well played.
Right. But then she claims that she's trying to prevent the human race's extinction. Again,
why? What?
Right. Is that something that Coulson should believe? I would think he's at least got to listen to what she's saying, given what he knows about the future.
Right. Well, but what does she know about that future? Or is she referring to something completely different? Because we don't really have any idea of what her motivation has been up until now. And this does give us a little bit more to work with, but it's still kind of mysterious as to what extinction level event she's referring to, because it might not have anything to do with the fracturing of the Earth. Maybe she's referring to the infiltration of alien forces like the Kree.
Right. I mean, she says, I want to show you what we're really up against. And, you know, well, what is the human race up against? I mean, she doesn't know about the fractured future Earth, right?
I would imagine so. And so that must mean she's referring to something completely different.
Right. Now, you know, we talked about the, you know, little reunion tour. And of course, we saw Carl Creel last week. And, you know, that bomb he's got strapped to his chest. So, again, do we infer that he's being held against his will?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Because he was brought into the team somewhat reluctantly, although he did get in the car when she mentioned the super team. He's certainly been working out, but who knows how much of a prisoner he was when we saw him with Ruby. And now, with the bomb strapped to him, it seems like he's an unwilling player, and it gives us hope that perhaps he could be turned to S.H.I.E.L.D.'s side. I mean, just even the way he acts seems like he might be a good guy being forced to do bad.
Yeah. Now, you know, in all of this, Coulson offers himself up to Hale if she'll let the rest of the team go free. And I love May. Can we have a moment?
Stop doing this, Phil. Yeah, because she thinks he's being very self-sacrificial and fatalistic. And he's saying, no, this is the right move, regardless of what's going on with me.
We're not going to argue in front of the bad guys. I love her. But if it is Cassius's father calling the shots, that's where did that come from?
I don't know. I mean, it's just been hinted at in the first half of the season, and I'm drawing some conclusions that perhaps are premature, but I mean, didn't that look like a Kree to you, even through the shadows?
Well, it certainly did. At times I thought it looked as if he was wearing a uniform, but again, it was difficult to tell. But it also, I guess, forces us to go back and listen in on some of the conversations that Cassius had, where he mentions that Earth was sort of his father's little baby, that you know, was something his father aspired to.
Right, and that Cassius just came in later after the shit hit the fan and had to clean up the mess, or at least keep it contained on behalf of his father, who probably considered it a failure.
Okay. Now, while all this is going on, we're watching Fitz essentially have a psychotic break. I don't know what else to call it. And we're not sure, which is, I guess, really why, from a narrative point of view, it's so effective, because we're not sure if somehow Framework Fitz made his way into this reality. Certainly, it could be something from the fear dimension, but it takes until, I think it might be Simmons, like, says, or maybe it was Daisy. Who are you talking to?
That's right. Well, it was really well played for the audience's benefit, because we certainly thought it was a manifestation of the fear dimension, mainly because Simmons had just manifested the astronaut from Maveth. So it sort of set us up to think, okay, it's starting to leak. We need to get this Gravitonium project working, because it's just going to get worse. And so why not think that when Framework Fitz comes out of the hazard suit after having knocked Deke out cold, that it wasn't Fitz at all, but another manifestation. Now, of course, as a manifestation of the fear dimension, we've mostly just seen things that come at you and try to hit you rather than coherent beings. So in that sense, maybe we should have been hip to what was going on. But, I mean, we didn't know any better. What could the fear dimension manifest?
And why would Deke be afraid of Framework Fitz? Why would that be one of his fears?
Because, well, it doesn't have to be something that he fears.
Well, that's true.
It'll come after anybody.
That's true. That's right. But I love Fitz asks Deke for some insight in how the Gravitonium works. And we're thinking, like, okay, there's some progress in their relationship. And clearly Deke is spacing out as he's watching his grandparents work. And, you know, he's concerned for their safety. And then I love that. I think one of my favorite lines when he tells Daisy that he's really become invested in them as a couple.
Yeah, it's almost like he's shipping them.
And understandably hopes they'll last for a long, long time.
Don't change this aspect of the timeline. I might not exist.
Right. But the conversations that he has with himself are really, you know, in retrospect, pretty chilling. You know, the whole, what are you doing here?
And when you start to reflect upon it, if you watch it a second time, you start to realize that he's struggling with what he knows he's going to have to do. And the break happens to help him justify what he's about to act on.
Right. Going back to those difficult choices. And I wonder, is this Fitz's fear that he will revert to that type of behavior, the behavior from the framework when he was, what was he, number two at Hydra or number three? Now I can't remember.
I think he was number two to Ada, yeah. But the doctor. But it's really something that should have manifested from the fear dimension, considering how strong he was feeling this fear, not only of his other self, but that his other self might be asserting its dominance in this choice that he's about to make with regard to Daisy.
Yeah. Now, you know, certainly that was one of my favorite lines when he talks about being invested in the couple. And then that scene at the end when Deke really consoles Simmons is certainly the emotional high point of the episode. But that said, Daisy lying restrained on Fitz's operating table and just really crying out for him to not do it. And we understand it on several levels. The pain notwithstanding, she's still in that mindset that my powers are what's going to fracture the earth.
Right. She only feels safe in not carrying out this horrible fate for the planet and all of humanity if this inhibitor is in place. So that must fill her with fear, not of the pain or what could happen as a result of the operation, because there was some danger that it could actually fry her brain, but rather what she would be capable of once the operation was finished.
Right. And at this point, she assumes he's an anomaly. I mean, she's certainly aware of Dr. Leopold.
But she can't see anything. Her skull is like locked into place, right?
Right. But she certainly can hear him. And the way he's talking to her, it's certainly not the Fitz that she knows. And once she realizes he's going to remove her inhibitor, because at first I think she's just assuming it's some sort of an experiment, but no, it's to remove the inhibitor, which from an audience standpoint, we're thinking, all right, well, that's not a bad thing. I mean, certainly that's something Coulson was in favor of occurring.
Right.
We just never got to that point medically.
Right. And I guess it was such a risk to her health. I mean, it literally could kill Daisy. But I think that's a decision that Leopold says he would make, the doctor would make. It's kind of a weird thing because halfway through our encounter with the doctor, we realize that, oh no, he's just not going to carry on his goals from when he was in the framework and go after Inhumans. And that's why he's going after Daisy. He's actually trying to help with the mission in a way that Fitz is, in his words, too weak to do himself. And that's when we should have realized, wait a minute, why would the doctor want to help with the mission unless it was actually just a part of Fitz?
Right, because that's one of those choices that nobody wants to have to make, because we know Daisy doesn't want it done. And of course, my gosh, when we see the operation and what it entails, oh, when he's just yanking that thing out of her neck, number one, I'm thinking, how did he get it in there? Cassius, that is.
Yeah, well, you can only assume that the tendrils just kind of shot out into her neurological system. But yeah, those long threads were quite horrific to watch being pulled out.
Right. And then once the operation is done and Daisy just, you just can't imagine what she's going through physically and emotionally. I will never forgive you. And I think Fitz says something like, yeah, you and everybody else.
Yeah, that's a very interesting phrase. And I wonder how sincere Daisy is being, or is that just her being in the moment and reacting? Because it could be something that Daisy will hold a grudge against Fitz, even though it's just one aspect of his personality. He still made that choice.
Well, right. And we don't see that time in between when he yanks it out of her neck to when she's actually compressing the gravitonium. And
no, then, it's like a voiceover, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously there had to be some sort of an exchange to explain to her why he did what he did. But the other interesting thing I found was once she got it into the sphere, he puts his hands behind his head. And I'm wondering, was that a sign of relief or surrender?
It looked like surrender, like he was kneeling.
Yeah.
And giving up to someone, but there was no follow through. So it does double as a sign of relief, almost like I finally am done with this. But no one took him away and put him in cuffs, did they?
Well, no, but I think they are now putting two and two together, Simmons especially, because she says, how long have you been seeing him? And is he in confinement? I mean, it seems as if that's the case, and you wonder whether he requested confinement.
That could be.
Who was it that requested confinement? This was several seasons ago. Now I can't even remember.
It could have been Coulson or maybe someone else with powers. I don't remember.
Right. Right. But for him, this inner conflict just boils down to the fear, as I said earlier, that this dark side of him is truly him. And of course, we know that's not. And we've talked about it before, that everybody's got that dark side.
Oh, and I remembered who it was. It was Andrew, because he had Lash as his dark side.
Oh, that's right.
So exactly. Everyone has their dark side. Just others manifest it a little bit more clearly than others.
Right. And as they're talking about this, he's noticeably playing with his wedding ring, and I half expected him to take it off.
Oh, I missed that. That's a cool detail.
And, you know, he tells her, I don't deserve forgiveness. And again, you know, we really feel for him. Her, for as brilliant as she is, what do I do? The man I love is falling apart.
Right. And that's what makes this last scene with Deke so much more powerful, is that she's raw emotionally. And so for Deke to take this moment to share another bombshell with her, you would think would be insensitive, but actually it might be giving her a little bit of hope that something good will come out of this in the end, even if they are stuck in this time loop, because it's hope that their relationship will survive, at least to the point where they have a child together.
Yeah, and intellectually, Fitz understands that this was not only the right thing to do, but perhaps the only thing to do.
Right, and I think part of me wants to agree with him that hard choice had to be made.
Yeah. But, you know, you mentioned the scene when Deke comes up to talk to a despondent Simmons and she's opening up to him. And, of course, that fear of losing Fitz. And, yeah, again, he says, I don't really know what to say. And she's like, well, that's a first. But but then she apologizes for that. You didn't deserve that. And then I love his line when he tells her that she knows him better than he knows himself. And how true.
Right. And then just starts rattling off little factoids about Fitz. And little by little, you start to realize that these are things that he couldn't possibly know. And the realization dawning on Gemma's face is just priceless.
Well, once he got to the prosciutto and was it Swiss? No, I can't remember what kind of cheese
mozzarella.
It is. Mozzarella.
Well, you knew it was coming because I think there was even a listener who predicted either on the Facebook group or in a feedback email that that was how it would be revealed. Like he would make a sandwich and they said, this was my grandmother's favorite or something like that. And it was pretty close to that.
Yeah. And then the realization hits her. You're our grandson. And then she pukes on the floor.
And that's the question. Is this her reaction?
No.
Or is this
she's pregnant.
The first signs of pregnancy?
Yes. I'm going with first signs of pregnancy. I mean, she's pregnant with Deke's mother.
But at the same time, that doesn't fill me with hope because if she's already pregnant, then there doesn't necessarily have to be a healing process with Fitz because that might have already been put into place, in which case they might not be together. He might be in confinement, at least for the time being. So we'll have to see what the aftermath of this is or whether they will come together, reunited in purpose because of having a child together.
Okay. Well, maybe I misunderstood what you were just saying. I mean, because I think this really adds to the drama that she is pregnant and he's a mess their relationship is going to be on rocky ground for the foreseeable future. I think if everything goes back to normal in the next episode or two, that's just not right.
Well, no, you totally understood me correctly. Those were the two possibilities I was presenting. And I agree. It should be the one where they have troubles because of what's just happened. And it increases the drama because of the fact that she's pregnant.
Yeah. And of course, Deke is, I think, set up to be the one that really helps them through this probably most difficult time of their relationship. And that's saying a lot because they've had a lot of difficult times in their relationship.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about Hale because I have to wonder what the heck she was trying to get out of getting on Zephyr 1. Because sure, she got some information and was able to sort of needle fill a little bit and bring Anton Ivanov on board as well. But like, there's no Ruby there. Carl Creel is there. Where's Alex? You know, it's like, I feel like there's part of the plan missing.
Yeah, I mean, Carl Creel's there, but like we said, he's got a bomb strapped to his chest. He willingly gets out of the car as soon as May recognizes who he must be. And then did you notice as soon as he gets out, the car like raises up about a foot?
Yeah, he's very dense. But I guess what I'm asking, though, is because Coulson did offer himself up if the team can go free. Is that what's going to happen now? Because obviously there's the team that's in the lighthouse, and that's the whole Fitz storyline. And then there's the folks in the plane. So like, what came of that in the end?
Well, I don't know. I mean, are you kind of getting at the fact that she might take control of Zephyr?
Right. I just don't know, like,
yeah,
who's left on board Zephyr, what came of that, because it just kind of cut to that epilogue where she was talking to the Kree. And so I assume that she's got the Zephyr team with her somehow, or she let them go and just has Phil. So I was just curious as to how that ended up because I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure we're really meant to know, but I guess it still goes back to the view that S.H.I.E.L.D. in its abbreviated form is still considered this dangerous to the reemergence of the Confederacy or Hydra, whatever we're calling it.
Right. I mean, yeah. Which is it? Hydra or Confederacy? Is one just a red herring for the other? And like when they mentioned the fact that LMDs were responsible for Talbot's death and not Daisy, I think Creel actually hears that statement. Maybe that will help turn him to the good side. But at the same time, the superior, who was totally against the inhuman scourge, as it were, as well, and only believed in the perfect human, has now been turned into the perfect robot soldier and has kind of rationalized his mission because of that. So I also am anxious to see how his new goals come into play, or is he just going to be, like I said earlier, a member of the supervillain team along with Ruby and the others?
Okay. And if this is indeed Kasai's father calling the shots, how did he get here? Did no one notice an alien spacecraft coming into Earth's atmosphere and landing?
Maybe that beacon that she was using as a decoy actually called him, like we were speculating earlier. But yeah, there's a lot of possibilities. And that's why I told you before we started recording that I felt like this was disjointed, because the Fitz storyline was great, but then we were all over the place elsewhere. So I feel like there's probably a few things that need to pay off in episode 15 next week.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the absence of Ruby, and to me that makes sense because I don't think General Hale trusts Ruby.
Mm-hmm. Nor should she.
Nor should she, to have her, you know, in the field on a mission of this magnitude. So it certainly was disappointing to not see her, but understandable.
Yeah, for sure. But it was a great episode, and, you know, we always enjoy them for what they are and as they move on to the next part of the story. And, you know, we don't want to be pessimistic about this being the last season or anything like that, but you just kind of have to enjoy the story that is placed in front of you. And I certainly am enjoying seeing a lot of old faces, new faces, and the path that's been set before our team. But it did actually give us a couple more funny lines from the crew, maybe not one that's so obvious as the one last week where you can't touch this, Mac Hammer. But let's see what Faith came up with us in her Cole Sass report this week.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the Cole Sass report. The doctor dropped in for a visit this week, so the sass was understandably light, although I did come up with three solid choices. But before I get to those, here's the winner from last week. By a near shutout, can't touch this.
Hey, Mac Hammer. Can't touch this.
Now's not the time.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
And now for this week's contenders. Number one, Faith or Xanax?
They're gonna be fine.
They'll figure it out. Have faith. Or a, you know, Xanax.
Number two, Superior Humanity.
You squash one cockroach, there's bound to be others nearby.
Although I think you will find I do not squash so easily these days.
So much for the Superior Humanity shtick.
And number three, party invitation.
I'll need to scan your hand, too, for weapons.
You know, somehow, this is only the second worst party invitation I've ever received.
Just put the damn hood on, Coulson.
You know me, Carl. Whatever lies Hale is selling you.
Look at how he scrambles to see a face.
Oh, you're still here.
Did I miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. Please be sure to join Taltos next week in tweeting your favorites to FBMC with the hashtag ColeSass. Come on, guys, I know you can send those tweets. To vote for this week's contenders, please visit facebook.com/groups/Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. GSM. While you do that, I'm going to put together a care package with some proper British junk food. Have a great week, everybody.
All right, I definitely know which one I'm picking on this one. But yeah, there's some good choices, you know. Some weeks are better than others in terms of the humor, but I like what Faith came up with. But let's go ahead and get into our feedback. We just heard from the two regulars, Skimmins and Taltos, but that's okay. Coming up on a holiday here, so we'll see how that shakes out. But let's see what Skimmins had to say first. She says, Daisy checking on Gemma after the attack. Skimmins! I also really loved her on the computer again. A very cool capture of Hale. I know he's a bad guy, but I love Framework Fitz showing up. And I think Skimmins has been advocating Framework Fitz not to be out of the picture. And so I'm sure she's glad he came back. He's up there with Evil Ward for me. If they combined with Ava as Madame Hydra, they'd be the villain trifecta for the series. I have to say, I'm not thrilled with Deke's opening this week. I was fine with some comments about Fitz and Simmons being safe and joking about metalwork being in his DNA. But they went overboard, it felt like, with him pushing the fact he knew who they were. So it brought down most of his opening to me this week. While I love Framework Fitz, how did this Fitz not shoot him the second he showed up? A fear dimension is open, Fitz. It's not the time to put down your gun. But of course, he wasn't really there, right?
Right. And I think that's the beauty of that narrative device, is that was it a fear anomaly, or is it, as we were saying, a psychotic break?
It's all in his mind, right?
Yeah, I think it's the latter.
Right. It's not a fear. It's just kind of like tricking us the same way it tricked everyone else. So he was the only one that saw him. I love that they called back to Framework Fitz being a concern for Gemma, because that's definitely something she has to deal with being with Fitz. He's got a dark side, just like everyone, and it's not always something she can support. Dirty Laundry is definitely my vote for the Coalsass poll. I'm definitely with Mac. The future isn't set, so no going rogue, Elena. Ian has to win episode MVP this week. I also give it to the writers, because I didn't see the twist coming with Framework Fitz / Fitz until Daisy asked who he was talking to. Well done, team. I do wish Gemma had tried to help Daisy, their best friends and fellow agents at the least, to push how far Fitz's darkness would take it, but I feel they didn't do that scene because the android would have shot her, and that would have put doubt on their romance, and sadly, they seem committed to Fitzsimmons. Framework Fitz is totally Fitz's ego, and I love he didn't try and back down from that fact. It was an extremely refreshingly handled scene in comparison to previous seasons where he tries to act all innocent. A good reveal of their connection, Deke, but I'm still split on Gemma and Fitz knowing who he is. I'm hoping her puking wasn't a sign of pregnancy, because that really would mean the end of the series, I feel, as you can't really have a baby on board the bus. That's a good point. I wonder if that's another sign of season 5 being the last, because they'd have to work in a baby somehow. We'll see. A baby plus Hydra feels very full circle. It's feeling more and more like the possible end of the series. Also, again, C-Mac, they can change the future, and Deke still exists, but Skimmins is together, forever holding on to that plot. A good episode. Well, thank you, Skimmins. A lot of great thoughts there, and sounds like you're echoing a lot of the ways we feel. Although I do think that the throwing up was a sign of pregnancy. So prepare.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. I think next week maybe we'll see a car seat in somewhere in Zephyr.
In Lola.
You know what? Whatever happened to Lola?
Maybe she was still in the SSR base. That would be a nice little reunion at the end of the series.
Yeah. All right. Well, we heard from Taltos, who says, Elena's declaration that she can't be killed because she saw herself in 2091 seems very foreboding. Once she gets back up and running, I can see her getting an invincibility complex and becoming reckless. In episode 505, Polly and Robin went off with Hunter, supposedly to join Bobby. However, we know from the 2018 flash forward that Robin was with the team in Zephyr 1. So, are we going to be getting at least another Hunter cameo this season?
No. I think I brought up a speculation of that, but I think the conclusion was that we were pretty much done with that. But that's a good point. I mean, we know that Robin somehow makes it back to the lighthouse, and yet we also know that Hunter left with her. So, maybe the events of the apocalypse forced her to take shelter there.
Okay. Now, Simmons talked about needing to change their actions, which is difficult without knowing what they previously did. Maybe Robin could help with that.
Oh, tell her what they decided so they can make a change. That's not her way, though. She's very cryptic.
Yeah. I think Creel will end up changing sides.
Me too.
You could almost see doubts starting to form when it was revealed the real Daisy didn't shoot Talbot.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hale's utter disregard for the lives of her underlings doesn't exactly inspire loyalty either.
Yeah. Hale is not my favorite villain that S.H.I.E.L.D. has come up with, that's for sure.
Yeah. I miss Glenn Talbot.
Yeah.
I mean, because we were never sure of his level of villainy, you know?
Yeah. My favorite villain has to be Ada of all the different ones over the seasons. But it's just that I think Hale suffers from the fact that we don't really know what she's up to. And I know that's part of the mystery, but it also kind of waters her down as a villain because of that, because we just don't really know what her motives are. And if you're going to go full evil, like Iago and Shakespeare, you know, you got to sell that. It's either got to be evil with a motive or super evil hive style.
Yeah. So, and in the short time we've known her, I almost believe in Ruby's evil nature more than her mother.
Yeah, exactly. So but maybe she'll change our mind on that as it gets closer to the end of the season, because you know, it's hard to keep in mind that we are in episode 14 here and there's still a good chunk of the series left. And you feel like, okay, they're going to start getting towards the idea that the Earth could be destroyed if this decision is made or that decision is made. But to stretch that out over, what, 8 episodes that are remaining, there's going to be a lot happening that we couldn't possibly anticipate. And that's kind of exciting in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a full pod if you look at it that way.
Right. So still plenty of story to come, and I can't wait to see what they come up with. But an enjoyable episode this week. We hope you enjoyed our discussion of it. But that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @Shield_GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM, which is also where you can vote on the Kolsas report.
And Mike and I will be back next week with our discussion of episode 15 of season 5 entitled Rise and Shine. But remember, after the episode airs, you can head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or call 304-837-2278.
And if you get a chance, please rate and review The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts to let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Because if we don't receive some more 5-star reviews on iTunes, Mike and I are going to be forced to drink the odium.